Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the moment of the evening every K-State fan enjoys. Settle down and pour a whiskey, crack open a LaCroix. Please put your hands together and make a little noise for your favorite Wildcatters, the handsome Bosco boys.
Ooh, Bosco's boys.
Come on, boys.
Oh. Boom, the boys are back, and we have what I think is going to be a fun episode, maybe a cathartic episode for me, because right before I hit record, I said, after this episode, I don't necessarily want to talk about this season ever again. This is our official basketball wrap-up show, and with everything, and look, you know, I don't monopolize his time as a guest on a show anymore, but I like to think that I'm at my best when I have this guest on. He is the smartest man I know, has changed the way I watch football and basketball. And right before I hit record, it changed the number one thing I look for in basketball games. And maybe we'll talk about that later. It is Jimmy Goheen, AKA KSU underscore fan, AKA the, you know, best of the three-man weave on the KSO Sunday show, which I think you guys have wrapped the official Sunday show until football season comes back. But I'm glad to have you on and talk about what really was a crazy basketball season that seemingly started back in August. And we're gonna just kind of put a bow on it. So that's enough of me talking. Jimmy, welcome back to the show.
Good to be back. I wish we were talking basketball under a little bit better circumstances. You know, we missed the NCAA tournament. We talked bubble like what, a week or so right before the tournament. And we kind of seemed like we're off the bubble and we're kind of back on the bubble. And then, you know, five bubbles were burst, which is, you know, kind of probably a record, pretty close to a record for a season. So we're kind of pushed off to not even being even an under consideration team. Although I would say we were probably sixth or seventh out still and would have been like second or third out in a normal bubble year. So, but not what we wanted. NIT game was disappointing. Didn't get a home game. Had to go on the road. Iowa dude shot his out of his head. And then the next game was like 1-for-11 from three when they went to Utah. So, but he decided to be Caitlin Clark for a night and K-State was done. And I think, you know, I don't want to dwell on the NIT game, but there were a few bright spots, Day-Day Ames and, you know, some of the freshmen, Betty Rich playing well, Gasson playing well, and now looking like he's going to be back. So some wasn't all bad, but, you know, I think a lot of our fans were ready for the season to be over. I know you were, Scott, and you said it loudly. I could have kept playing in the NIT for another week or two, but it's good to be done. And now being portal season and looking at what's next, and that's kind of the fun part. But I think it is good to reflect back a little bit on the season, and we're going to talk about some of that stuff. So that's good.
Yeah, I touched on the NIT game a little bit. But Day-Day Ames and Buddy, I mean, I was excited, and you know, it seems like David Gasson's going to come back. And I'll say this, like, I was ready for it to be over, but, you know, come 7:55, I was like, all right, you know, tune in. Let's get this other game done beforehand. Like, I found myself, okay, you know, let's watch it. Sadly, it quickly got to the point where I'm like, what the hell is this? But, you know, Day-Day Ames was fun. Buddy Rich, hopefully he's going to be back. You know, that was a fun game from him. So I'm right there with you. We will give a shout out real quick to the Batcats, ranked anywhere between 23 and 25. They got a big home series with Texas this week. Again, I'm not going to pretend that I know anything about college baseball. I would refer people to the Aggieville Alley Cats. They know exactly what's going on. Tyson Neighbors is back. Kalen Culpepper is having a big season so far. So again, while we're here at Bosco's Boys kind of wrapping stuff up, and we're going to go to our quote unquote off season schedule, meaning one show a week, sometimes two, but coming back, dialing it back from three a week. I do want to give a shout out to them. And as things heat up, we'll get Brian on, we'll get, you know, folks on to talk about hopefully a Big 12 race. I would love to see the Cats win the Big 12 in any sport. And if it's baseball, that'll be awesome. Before we put a bow on the basketball season, first a shout out to Manhattan Brewing Company. So big news as of the 26th, as we're recording this, they are going to be at Taps and Tastes at Boulevardia, which is the big summer festival here in Kansas City. So they're going to be amongst, I think, over 50 different distilleries and breweries at the Tastes and Taps event. There's going to be a ton of food trucks, obviously all those different breweries and distilleries. So I'm pumped to see Manhattan Brewing Company getting involved in the region's biggest festival. I'll be down there. I'm going to be saying hi to my guys. And look, I don't want to say exactly what it is because we don't have it completely locked up, but somewhere in the middle of April, somewhere in there, we're going to have another fun live episode on the 1012 Network YouTube page. So we might have our second beer and food pairing episode with the guys from Manhattan Brewing Company and also with my guy Philip from 1012 Network. So all sorts of fun stuff going on with Manhattan Brewing Company. And of course, get your Wabash Ale at Toynton Family Stadium. So, I mean, hey, they're the best. They're the best in Kansas. And before you know it, it'll be Blitz Month again, and Jimmy and I will be doing our Blitz Month episode from Manhattan Brewing Company. So love those guys. All right, let's get into it. When you sit back and reflect on this basketball season as a whole, what letter grade do you give this year? I know you're a teacher, and I know that's not the perfect way to wrap up a season, but we'll dive in deeper. We'll talk about why maybe you landed there, but as you're sitting here, what would you have to give them on the report card?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I think we have a good segment of our fan base that just automatically gives the season an F just because we didn't make the NCAA tournament. I'm not sure that's a fair assessment. I think I'm going to say like a B minus or a C plus. Like I think I go a little bit above average, and I think we'll get into the context of this a little bit more. But I do think, you know, you had some really pretty good wins. You beat Baylor, you beat KU, you beat Iowa State, you beat Texas in the Big 12. Those are four really good wins. I think even though only one of those teams is still playing, BYU, I think I mentioned in there. In the non-conference, you beat Villanova and Providence, who, although they weren't tournament teams, they were bubble teams just like us. The Big East, I probably think, got the shaft a little bit in getting teams in the dance with only three, but that was a pretty competitive league, and those are three pretty good wins. And even wins like LSU wasn't bad. UCF wasn't a bad win as well, because those were both postseason teams, even though they're NIT teams. So you got that, but then, you know, you do have to talk about the frustrating losses. You lost two teams in the non-conference that, you know, at the time seemed like they were pretty good, but Miami and USC turned out to be bad teams. below average, not even postseason teams. You have home losses to Nebraska, Oklahoma, and TCU, which were all frustrating. And then road losses to Texas Tech, Oklahoma State, and Cincinnati, which were all frustrating. You know, if you flip two of those games, any of those seven games I mentioned there, or eight games I mentioned there, we're a tournament team almost likely. And if you just flip four of them, half of those games, we would have been talking about seeding 2 weeks ago, not about being in the dance. So, but then the other side of that is we won nine games in overtime or by one possession. So you gotta throw that in. I think I counted it as at like 9-5 or 9-6 in one possession or overtime game. So we won our first fair share of close games and managed those, and had a few blowout losses too that were disappointing. So it's one of those that I go back and forth on, with how this season went, with the expectations of this season, and with how it went down. But I think I would probably, you know, I'd probably lean toward that C+, because I think I would say it's above average given the context of the season. And I don't think an NIT season, especially if it's your floor, is a bad season.
Yeah, so I'm not looking at it as like, oh, maybe this is our floor or anything like that. My official grade on the season is a C-. Funny enough, I had this conversation with Kellis Robinette, texting with him after the NIT game, and we'll talk about the reasoning, but I agree with you. I don't think, oh, it's an embarrassment of a season, you know, oh, put everyone on the hot seat if you miss the tournament, you know, 1 year. This is, again, you know, Tang's only second year. But in my head, I do think, not an F, but I think in most seasons, if you miss the tournament at K-State, it's probably a D for me, but I'm going C-, and we'll talk about why I'm going C- here in a second. But you mentioned some of those losses, and again, maybe if I wasn't a season ticket holder, maybe if I wasn't there, maybe I'd be, you know, oh, we'll call it a C or something. But that Nebraska game and that Oklahoma game, I just have visceral reactions still to this day thinking about them. And really the Nebraska game, having to hear a Go Big Red chant in Bramlage, and just the stuff that surrounded, you know, that loss, really just still to this day gives me a really bad taste in my mouth. So that's maybe why I'm C-. Again, we'll talk right here in a sec, like next question, why it's not lower, but C- is where I am there. And then here's the question. And I phrased it a very specific way to me, and you can add additional context if you will, because you and I have had the conversation as to why I phrase it like this. But how much of a curve are you applying? Because, you know, as of September, Tank thought he was going to have Naquan Tomlin, who was going to be a focal point of this team, especially on offense. So how much of a curve for that? Or if you want to throw in Glover, someone who I don't think is worth a curve, you disagree, but that's okay. So how much of a curve did you do because of not having the roster that he thought he was going to have even in September?
I quite a bit, actually, because I went back and looked at just some of the timeline, because I do think it's important to look at. And number one, this was a season you only get one every 4 years where K-State got an overseas trip. Now we have to keep in mind during the trip, K-State didn't have two of the players, one of them which played, one of them which didn't. Quez Glover and Will McNair were not on the trip. But they had everyone else. They had Tomlin. So you start in late July.
And no Gasan, by the way, because he was playing FIBA.
Gasan was playing with another team as well on the trip. So you have that 10-day trip in August, where you play three games, you get to practice, your team's together. But like you said, we weren't all together. And I don't want to say it completely, but it feels like it kind of was a wasted trip for us compared to a normal season where you have your full team. You know what I mean?
And not only was it a wasted trip because, you know, you end up not having contributors who were there. You know, you didn't have David Gasan, you didn't have Will McNair, and Quez Glover wasn't even in the picture at that point. But keep in mind, when they came back, that's when the whole talk about how, oh, we're also going to be changing up our offense. So they wasted it by doing all those practices and all those games with an offense that they then migrated away from and didn't re-implement until December.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I want to get into because I, you know, I usually I forget how early practice starts now. Practice started September 25th, and Glover was signed middle of August. Will McNair was signed early September, so you did have both those guys. But we didn't lose Glover until November 1st, which was the first exhibition game against Emporia State. And we didn't lose Will Naquan Tomlin until October 30th or that weekend. So they had 5 weeks of practice with those two guys.
Was Tomlin practicing, though?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know.
I don't think he was.
Because looking back at the articles, he was October 30th was when he was removed from the team completely. Yeah, so I don't know what the timeline was with him, but you for sure had Glover. I don't know when Tomlin was removed from practice. Do you remember the dates on that?
So, again, this is all because they never openly talked about it. Keep in mind, it wasn't until he missed an NIL charity event. And look, I'm not calling out anyone who covers the team, but I think that they were taking hook, line, and sinker what the staff wanted them to believe. But I don't think he ever practiced. I don't think he ever practiced. And again, take what you guys want from it. But the Manhattan Mercury article, which again, there was no need for it, but whatever. it says in there that he had just completed the suspension that week before what happened at Tubby's, which ultimately led to him being suspended again. So I don't think he ever started practicing after they came back from and I don't think something happened in Israel for the record, because I know that rumor was going around. I don't think that's true, but I don't think he ever practiced with the team.
But that's probably, I think that context is good, but still, I think, you know, they had 100 hours of practice, 20 hours a week, 5 weeks, where they had Glover practicing, and they, I think, were at that time still probably planning on Tomlin being part of the team. So you have a good portion, the most practice you're going to have until December and Christmas break. So I think that was key. And then, you know, and then you're playing a game that Friday against USC in Vegas. And, you know, I think we may have met USC when they played one of their two or three best games of the season before they knew that they had egos and issues on that team. So that was a problem. And then you have, you know, you have over the next 6 weeks, you have 8 games against KenPom top 160 teams. So even though we didn't play like a bunch of top teams in the country, we were still playing pretty good competition. And like, and you mentioned the 5-out offense, you know, you had put that in, you know, partially for Tomlin, partially to try to recruit Patrick Nabongwa, and that goes out the window. And then, you know, as you said, by Big 12 play, we pretty much scrapped that offense. So that's why all of that context we just talked about is why I do put that a little bit on a curve as far as the grade goes, above where maybe I would put it if it was a full intact roster all season long. You know, regardless, if you take any program and remove two of the top 13, two of your 13 scholarship players, you're going to hurt. And then if you lose other guys to injuries as the season goes on, and what I would guess, I would still, you know, I know your Glover point, I would still say two of your top 9 players didn't play at all this season. So I think we can look at KU and see what they looked like with losing a player before the season and then losing McClure as the season goes on, and say, you know, even a really elite program that has top 50 high school recruits coming in couldn't handle it very well, let alone us. So it is what it is. It's disappointing, but I do think that context matters.
Yeah, and even myself, I had basically a half letter grade curve in there. And again, I was frustrated that some folks were still trying to use that as a quote unquote excuse for individual games in January and February, yeah. because at that point, hey, the team is what it is. But when you look at it as a whole, because that's what we're doing, we're not diagnosing the Iowa State game on the road or the Cincinnati game. We're looking at the season as a whole, and no matter how you want to go about it, that was a massive impact. So I'm right there with you. Here's to fingers crossed to a less dramatic summer and early fall this upcoming season for Jerome Tang and the team. Let's talk positive. When you look at this team, who would you award the MVP to?
Yeah, you know, it probably somewhat controversial with some of our fans, but I would go with Tyler Perry just because I think he had the highest ceiling of any player. He had 11 games of 20 or more points and 24 in double figures. He had some bad games too. You know, he had 9 or 10 games in single digits. So he had the most range in his impact, but I think he had the highest impact. Some of his best games were in big wins over Providence, Baylor, KU, and Texas. He was an honorable mention All Big 12 player. So I would put him at the top. Kaluma was probably second. He had, you know, a share of impact performances, Villanova, BYU, and Iowa State as probably three of his better games. But he also had some low ceiling or low floor games as well in games. And he was probably the one that, you know, the first month or two of the season, they had trouble with engagement. And it was an off and again, on again kind of thing. He missed a game for a quote unquote injury in there that seemed suspicious. That factors in. And then, you know, the third leg of the wheel was Cam Carter, who did have some solid games. LSU comes to mind. He was pretty good against Baylor, KU, and really good against Iowa State when we beat them in Manhattan. But he also had some low floor games and really struggled for a good stretch of the Big 12. I think some people would throw Gasan up there maybe because he was a consistent player, but he just wasn't the impact of those three as far as scoring goes. He's diverse on defense, and he also struggled with injury a lot of the year, and I think that limited a lot of what he could do with that meniscus tear. So those are the ones that come to mind, but I would ultimately pick Tyler Perry just because he had those biggest stages sometimes in some of our biggest wins.
Yeah, I think it's Tyler Perry, and I at times was tough on him because – I mean, heck, I had an ongoing, tally of games he shot under 33% because he had like seven all of last season and he had like seven in a row. But I think he found his stride, and I do think it took him time to get used to game in, game out high major basketball. But I think it has to be him. But the guy you mentioned that I was like, okay, he's not the MVP, but I think, and I didn't even know the extent of it until maybe about a week or two ago, but what David Gasan battled through and how he's like, no, I'm not getting surgery. I'm not doing that. That can wait till the end of the season. And still giving everything he did because, you know, there was a knee issue. It sounds like he had some shoulder issues as well. And sounds like Tyler Perry battled through some shoulder stuff as well. So those would be my two guys. We'll get a little, pessimistic before we kind of bounce back to a positive surprise, but who on this team, and not them as a person, this is not nothing personal, you know, on the court, who was the biggest disappointment this season?
I hate, cause he had a pretty good year, but Cam Carter, I think probably because of how he started scoring and being pretty efficient. And then in Big 12 play, he still scored decently, but the efficiency numbers dropped substantially once we got into Big 12 play. And, you know, he was a key cog of the Big Three. He was also, you know, touted to be our best defender. And I don't know that I always saw that in Big 12 play as well. So something happened. I don't think it was some like major rift, but I do think there was something that caused a little bit of a disconnect there between him and other players or him and the staff or something that, you know, ultimately let, you know, he's gone, he's in the portal. So I think we know something had to go on because here was a guy that I think in December or November, went raved on about how Tang had been the best coach he's ever had and meant so much to him. And then all of a sudden he's leaving. He's the first guy in the portal after the season's over. So, but that would be my biggest one. I don't, you know, I could say the freshman a little bit because, you know, I think the rankings weren't that much different than Barry Brown, Dean Wade, and Cam Stokes out of high school. And those guys were like 7, 8, 9, 10 point scorers as freshmen. And we didn't really see that out of these guys. So I don't know if I had the wrong baseline. Probably some of that is my misjudgment, just based on, okay, these guys are like top 100-ish players. Those three were top 100-ish players. So maybe they're going to do the same thing. And they really didn't. You know, the only one that really stepped up and contributed in a major way was Day-Day Ames. So, and then, you know, I'm not going to rail on them too much, but you would hope two guys that are in their second year in the program, Fenister and Manning, could do a little bit more. And they kind of have had their moments of being energy guys off the bench. And I think mainly because the other guys were playing so poorly, the coaching staff had to push some buttons. But those two not really being better than the freshmen really even kind of stand out. But I'm not going to go too far on that. I think Cam would be my top.
Yeah, for me, it's Cam as well. And part of it isn't necessarily his doing, because I remember when the whole Joe Toussaint and Muhammad Wagi thing was going on. And I remembered when it ended up that, okay, it fell through and Toussaint was going to Texas Tech. And I remembered getting very upset about it because I thought we needed him mainly to kind of push Cam Carter to the back, not to the back of the bench, but to the bench. And I remember getting in a lot of arguments with people online and people like, well, you know, Cam's gonna, you know, another year. And early on, I thought, okay, it's going to be, you know, Cam, he's going to have this big season. And then it just seemingly fell off of a cliff. Now he had a little bit of a dead cat bounce versus Iowa State at home. But that kind of was it from Cam. And I think you're onto something. He used to be a staple in almost every single media availability up at the podium. He used to be doing a lot more speaking to the media, and then all of a sudden it flat out stopped almost immediately in the portal. And again, you know, I'm not going to go into too many details, but if he ends up landing at a spot that was almost immediately rumored when he got into the portal, again, I don't want to accuse him of talking to teams before the season's over. But if you start hearing rumors about two specific teams before the Big 12 tournament immediately in the portal, that's disappointing for me. Let's get happy, though. Let's, you know, quickly move on past that because, you know, people don't want to hear us rag on players. Who is a positive surprise? And you know, it can be full body of work, or for me, like I'm gonna jump the line a little bit. I think what Day-Day Ames was able to do late was probably there, but that might have a little bit more to do with him not doing anything early. And granted, unlike Barry, Cam, and Dean, I don't think they needed to be 20 minute players right away, or at least it wasn't the intention for them. So that might've had a little bit to do with them, but I thought by the end of the year, he was the biggest positive surprise for me.
Yeah, I would agree. He was my top choice. He actually, you know, he had some double digit scoring games early, maybe not against the best teams, but he started pretty well. It was really the middle kind of section early, and then early, late non-conference, early Big 12 that he really struggled the most. And then, you know, kind of, I think maybe the switch was they just inserted him in the starting lineup. I think the Oklahoma State game, somewhere around there. And he really had a really good finish of the season. I think he was over 40% from three, around 2 assists per game. Increases efficiency because, you know, we talked about he was at Javon Thomas levels for a while. But he surpassed that by quite a bit. And he actually – you know, if you want to comp him, different skill set, different players, but his comp really is Cam Carter last year to Day-Day Ames this year is a pretty good comp of what they produced, even though, you know, Carter scored a little bit more, but Ames overall, and we, especially when you look at efficiency numbers and per 100 numbers, Ames was pretty close. So he would be one. This will be a controversial one too. And it's more because of the offense. Will McNair was a decent offensive player.
Oh, I agree with you. I agree with you 100%.
Top five in the Big 12 in two-point percentage. Pretty good rebounder. Defensively was rough. Like, I'm not going to lie. You know, we've had plenty of conversations about his pick-and-roll defense and struggling against athletes. But Will McNair did some nice things for this team and was a contributor. He was one of their top, probably top five players most of the season. So I didn't know what to expect out of him when we got him. And he didn't do much at Mississippi State last year. Had one kind of good year in New Mexico State when they were decent a couple years ago, when Chris Jans was popular and even getting mentioned for K-State at the time. So I would say Will McNair would be my second surprise behind Day Day Ames.
Yeah, we're right in line again. I think, you know, there's no defending Will McNair on defense, but I think he caught way too many like arrows of people just being frustrated and trying to find someone to go after. So I'm right there with you. All right. That's surprise. We're going to start getting into some hard numbers, some data here where you're the best in the business. Before we do, I'm going to give a shout out to Charlie Hustle. I'm currently wearing my gray Kansas City crew neck sweatshirt, which I think pairs perfectly with the ball cap that I have on. There's a certain, professional baseball team that's getting things started this week, tomorrow, as folks are listening to it. So if you want to get geared out, again, they have these great Kansas City crew neck sweatshirts, the KC Heart shirts, and the entire Crown Town collection. So if you cheer for the same baseball team that Jimmy and I do, get over to Charlie Hustle. And of course, they always have the best officially licensed K-State gear in the world. So check out charliehustle.com today. I promise you're going to be happy. All right. When you look at the full year's worth of data, when you're comparing K-State to the other Big 12 schools, when you're comparing them to the nation, where were some bright spots for K-State, if there were any? I don't know. I mean, you're the numbers guy. I don't know if there are any bright spots or not.
There were, I think it starts on the defensive end. K-State was number 25 in Ken Palm's adjusted defensive efficiency at 0.97 points per possession, which is really good, you know. And this goes to the argument that a lot of our fans had that this team didn't play hard. And I don't think you can achieve that defense and not play hard. Now that the decision-making and shooting and things on the offensive end may at times look like we didn't know what we were doing, which I think people associate with effort. And I don't think that's always the case. So that defense was really good. And particularly this team was really good at field goal percentage, shot defense, first shot defense, whatever you want to call it, top 25 in effective field goal percentage defense. Number 37 in both two-point percentage defense and three-point percentage defense, and top 100 in block rate, which, you know, probably a lot of people wouldn't think about. So our shot defense and our overall defense was really good, because if you want to be good at anything, you want to be good at preventing shots, because, you know, that's how you score. Offensively, not a lot of great things, but we were number 42 in free throw rate, which is solid.
Getting my favorite a lot. My favorite
is a good stat. We're number 75 in offensive rebounding rate, although we're kind of up and down in Big 12 play. Number 56 in assist rate, which has been a kind of Jerome Tang trade, is to have assisted field goals. Just outside the top 100 in 2-point percentage, not too bad. And top 60 in 2-point percentage at the rim. So we were pretty good at getting the rim. 159 and shot rate at the rim. So getting shots at the rim is always a good thing. And if you can get there, you know, about 40% of the time, get about 40% of your shots at the rim and be top 60 at making them there, that's a good thing. So those were kind of the things that all show up as the biggest positives for this team.
All right, let's get negative. Shower down, turnover rate, probably. defensive rebounding rate probably wasn't great either. So let's hear it.
Yeah, those you kind of nailed several of them there. number 345 in turnover rate at 21% of possessions, just over 21%. Not great. We were not a good shooting team. Number 286 in three-point percentage at just under 32%. And that got better because we were trucking at almost 30% until the last half a dozen games or so. So we had several games there where we shot 45, 46%. And that's tough because 41% of our shots are threes. So, you know, I agree with it completely. The system of let's get shots at the rim or shots from three. So K-State split, we're about 40% from three and 40% at the rim and only 20% two-point jumpers. So I'll take that. But here's the deal. On two-point jumpers, K-State ranked 360 in the country. So that's what really brought down the two-point rate or two-point percentage is we were great when we got to the rim, but whenever we took two-point jumpers or floaters or anything tough, you know, away from the basket, we were not very good. So, and it's one of the reasons I rail on two-point jumpers a lot because it's just such a bad shot and was bad, really bad for K-State this season. And then on the defensive end, you know, I just talked about how great we were at shooting or shot defense or first shot defense, whatever you want to call it. We were pretty bad everywhere else. 250 in defense rebounding is what you mentioned. 254 in turnover rate forced, which was a big drop off from last year, and 192 in free throw rate allowed. So that kind of negates a little bit of, you know, being a great off a pretty good offensive rebounding team and a good free throw rate team is negated a bit by the defensive rebounding and free throw rate numbers. And then the turnover rate forced is exacerbated by the turnover rate that we had, although we're going to get into how often that actually impacted wins and losings, because I think that's, you know, the kind of the key, but it's still not great. And that's, you know, as we get to the next section, that's going to be the debate is if you keep those possessions, how much does it impact your winning and losing? Does it just mean you miss another three? Does it just mean you give up a defensive rebound? I don't know. So that's what we don't. You don't know what you don't know, and you don't know what you do on those possessions if you don't turn it over 21% of the time.
Well, you hinted at it, and this actually led to the big conversation we had beforehand. Where did some of these, you know, stat indicators, you know, how did they correlate to the outcome? Because like you said, there's no way to truly know the causation. So we'll talk about the correlation. So where did some of these correlate? Let's start with turnovers, because I think that was the biggest complaint by K-State fans the entire season. How did turnover rate correlate to wins and losses this year?
It's a great question, and it's kind of a funny, you know, because this is, you know, and I think Jerome Tang knew this because he mentioned it a lot that, you know, he would mention turnovers don't make a big difference in winning and losing, and then some of our fans would go crazy about what's our coach talking about. But here's the deal. I just tracked games against KenPom top 150 teams, and we had 28 of those games this season, including non-conference and including Iowa in the NIT. We only had four games where our turnover percentage rate was better than our opponents, and we lost three of them. We were 1-3 in the games where we had a better turnover rate. And when we were worse than our opponents, it was 11-11. So we were 500 when we were worse than our opponents in turnover rate and 1-3 when we were better.
So maybe we get into the tournament if we turn it over a little bit more in those four games is what I'm hearing.
I don't know. So then you look at cutoffs. So I looked at 20% and 24% as cutoffs. So under 20%, which still isn't great, but it was good for this team, and over 24%, which is bad for most teams, really bad, and bad for us. So we had nine games under 20% turnover rate, and we went 4-5. And we had nine games at 24% or worse turnover rate, and we went 4-5. And we had 20 games from 21 to 23% turnover rate, and we went 10-10. So that number, like, that's exactly what Jerome Tang was talking about. whether we turn it over or not, and you know, there are a lot of moving parts. And like I said, like you said, this is probably not causation, but it's correlation still kind of is important to look at. It really didn't matter a lot whether we turn it over a lot, whether we turn it over a little, and whether we turn it over somewhere in the middle. Now, this does get to the point about defense. And when we forced turnover rates of 18% or better, we were 8-5. So forcing turnovers seemed to matter. And when we first forced turnover rates 70%, 17% or less, we were 6-10. So there was more correlation between forcing turnovers for K-State than for the turnover rate we had ourselves. So, but like we said, you don't know what you don't know. You don't know what you do when you, if you don't have all those turnovers, but you know, just the raw number of sorting out turnover rates, it wasn't as big a deal as our fans probably think it was. But it was probably more of a big deal than maybe I'm thinking of just by looking at the raw numbers too.
Yeah. And look, if all of a sudden we only turned it over 15% of our possessions the entire year, yeah, probably you probably win more. But again, I do think it is fascinating that 1-3, you know, in our best games versus top teams. Was there anything, so you mentioned when we turned over our opponents, that was a better indicator, there's a better correlation to winning. Was there like one or two things that you diagrammed that you saw, okay, if we do this or this, it's almost an automatic win, not automatic, but this was our best like winning percentage when hitting a certain threshold?
Yeah. And again, these are all numbers from versus top 150 KenPom teams. The number one factor for K-State, and we talked about earlier, is an offensive downgrade was three-point shooting. Like when K-State shot from three well, they played well. And I think, you know, that I think this goes hand in hand with 41% or more of our shots being threes. Of course, if you make them, you're going to be good. But here's the thing, K-State didn't have to be great. So K-State was 12-7 when making at least 33% from three, just a third of them. And even if you just up that to 35%, they were 9-3. So they had a bunch of games there at 33%. When shooting better than our opponent from three percentage wise, we were 12-5. So we won over 70% of our games just when we shot better from three. And when we were worse from three, we were only 1-7. So very bad when we were worse, and 5-9 when we allowed 33% or better from three. So that was a huge factor in what we did well. Our best factor on offense was free throw rate. And that was the number two factor in winning and losing as well. K-State was 10-4 with a better free throw rate than their opponents. So again, just over 70% of their 70% winning percentage. They were 11-5 with a free throw rate of at least 39%. So if you ever look at that number, that gives you a little context. And they were 3-10 with 38% or worse free throw rate. So that's a big swing just at that 39-38% number for free throw rate. And then when you look at opponents, we were 4-11 when worse than our opponents from free throw rate. So that, you know, kind of goes hand in hand. And we were 9-2 when our opponents were under 30% free throw rate, excuse me, and 2-8 when they were 40% or better free throw rate. So free throw rate was a major, major factor in looking at this team. So, and by far, if you look at, you know, looking at all the numbers, three-point shooting and free throw rate were the two biggest factors in winning and losing games. The other slight one would be two-point percentage, although it not nearly as big a factor. And then the funny thing was I broke out offensive rebounding percentage and defensive rebounding percentage. We were almost like 500 no matter how I broke it out. Good, bad, great free, or offensive rebounding rate, bad offensive rebounding rate, giving up a bunch of offensive rebounds, not giving up a bunch. It's like 500 every way you break it out. So it was really weird. Usually rebounding is a bigger factor for most teams, but for this team, rebounding was just like, whatever, kind of weird.
So my takeaway from this entire segment is instead of shooting a 2-point jump shot or floater, put your head down, try to get fouled at the rim. Although I will say this, it goes against my, you know, accolading for free throw rate. The two times where we did that in end of game situations, Tyler Perry putting his head down, trying to get fouled at the rim. It failed miserably. So maybe you know, that's why I'm behind a microphone and you know, coaches are doing what they're doing. But
and I would argue, and this is not a knock on Tyler Perry, that's probably you need a bigger guard to do that. That's recruiting over, not, and they get nothing against Tyler Perry. You need a 6'2 guy and not a 5'9 guy.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. I hope folks listening to that, and it's not to try to convince people not to complain about turnovers, but I do hope it does challenge anyone who's listening to take a step, you know, take a step away from the ledge and you know, take a deep breath and try to dive a little bit deeper instead of just freaking out over turnovers next year. But hey, maybe we'll just not turn it over next year. So we'll see what happens. Currently, K-State has 4 spots to go portaling. I think at least the current rumors, the current chatter is that the 2 folks who were going to go in the portal are in the portal. Sounds like there might be a couple decisions that are still up in the air, specifically Kaluma. I still am not buying into it. I still would be shocked if he comes back. But people way smarter than me are saying, hey, there's a chance he could be coming back. So, you know, 4, if he doesn't come back, there's going to be 5 spots open. So if you were going to talk to Coach Jerome Tang, if you're going to say, hey, this is what I think you should do with these 4 to 5 spots, what would you, you know, present to him as you collect a fee for your consulting?
Great question. First one would go back to some of the stuff we talked about earlier. And hopefully NIL helps with this, but don't be so selective that we're waiting till August and September to sign in the last 2 guys. Like, I think that was a big issue and would be my biggest knock on last year's portaling, is that, you know, we didn't get Glover until mid-August. We didn't get McDair until mid-September. And that's just not ideal if you want to form a team, and especially in a year, you know, it's not as impactful maybe in the future, but especially last year when you had a trip in August, early August, and you don't even have 2 of your guys on your roster. And then, you know, one of them is going to be playing with his national team, like you mentioned, that really negates the impact of that, that trip. Hopefully it still helps out the freshmen and the guys that return, but that would be number one. But as far as what I would look for, I think you have tiers of portaling. I think tier one is who you're going to pay for. You know, last year was Perry and Kaluma. So what are you looking for there? I think you need a high-level guard who can score and who can distribute. Yeah, I think, you know, when we got Perry, he was more of the scorer type, but not the distributor type. I think we had a connection there, so it was kind of a no-brainer to get him. But I think maybe a little bigger guard and a guard who's a better passer coming in that you know but can still score the ball. So that would be my number one in the tier one area. Number two would be, you know, a high-level scoring big who can give you 25 minutes, who can also rebound, ideally who could shoot a little bit, but doesn't have to be that, and who can defend multiple positions. And that was kind of, you know, we talked about McNair earlier. That was the biggest knock for me for McNair is, number one, he could guard one position. Number two, he didn't guard that position always greatly. And number three, when he did get out of position guarding, it was a disaster. So someone who's a little more diverse, doesn't have to be like Gasan, who can guard almost 1 through 5, but you need to guard a guy who can, because you're going to get those switches on. Everybody runs ball screens. You're going to get switched up with a big on a guard, and you need him to be able to manage that a little bit better than we did this year, even though we had pretty good defense. Thirdly, I would go for a wing that can play multiple positions and can shoot. Guy that can, you know, play a 3 or 4 for you, maybe even a 2 if you had to in a pinch. So that'd be my third spot. And then the 4 spot is, I think you can always use guard depth. And I think we saw that this year. A guard, the combo type that can shoot it or distribute it. You know, you're probably not going to get both. You know, I'd probably pick distribute over shoot if I had to, more like a Desi Sills type. And then, you know, I think that rounds out your portaling if you have to go in the portal. So what that's, we know now.
Yeah, yeah. So that's for if Kaluma does decide to go pro or if he goes somewhere else. Again, I'm still like just talking about it, I'm still shocked. I mean, I've completely written it off. I still think that's gonna happen. But if you get that fifth spot, where do you go with that fifth portal spot if that fifth spot comes up and Kaluma is the one who decides to go elsewhere?
I think it's got to be probably another winger big, someone who can rebound. You know, you probably aren't going to replace quite what he – I mean, Kaluma's a talented guy. Like, he can do a lot of things. His shot was slow and his first step was slow, which I think is going to hurt him in the pro world. But someone with, you know, that ability to play, because he could play a three or four and was more of a, you know, limited on his ability to attack, although he did get to the free throw line a decent amount. So it doesn't have to be quite like that. But I think if you lose Kaluma too, you still need two guards. You still need a big. And then you still need a wing. And then I think the other one could be a wing or a four who could step out and shoot it.
All right. Final question. We have, for the most part, no clue what the schedule is going to look like. I think we know a handful of our non-con games, and I think it's safe to assume we'll get KU home and away. Although I'll tell you this, from what I've heard, that may not be a foregone conclusion. There may not be a protected home and away for anyone in the Big 12 when it comes to basketball. That's still being discussed with the 20. Again, with the 20, you're still going to be playing a lot of teams home and away. But I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that there will be anything protected home and away in basketball. So we'll see when those announcements come out. But we don't know the schedule. We know there's going to be 20. We don't know who's going to be home, who's going to be away, any of that type of stuff. But if you had to make a prediction, if you had to put like a confidence level 1 through 10, you can go decimals if you want, about this team getting back to the NCAA tournament. Again, 4 to 5 spots open, no clue on the schedule. We don't know who's going to be on BYU next year. We don't know who's going to be on anyone's team next year. But where is your confidence rate that we're back in the Big Dance next year?
I would say an 8 or a 9. I really think I trust his staff still. I'm not down on him at all. I think if you take any program and remove 2 of your 13 scholarship players and likely 2 of your top 8 or 9, you're going to struggle. So given Tang has a full roster by December and we're playing with a full roster in December, you know, you might have a guy injured by then, but I think I like the chances that he's going to get a group. He's going to get them to buy in, to play together, to play hard, play good defense. I still think they got a lot out of this group this year, especially because of how well they played good defense. And some of the things on offense, you do have to improve those factors that K-State obviously needs to win, three-point shooting, getting to the free throw line, better ball handling and decision-making, because I do think reducing that turnover rate to 18-19% would make a substantial difference. And then defensively, you know, some more athletes, long athletes that can force pressure and force some turnovers, because I think ingrained in the defense philosophy is an ability to force tough shots and force tough shooting percentages, but you can't be that bad in the other three areas. And then that reduces your margin for error, because sometimes teams are just going to hit shots. And if you aren't doing forcing turnovers or defensive rebounding or preventing teams from getting the free throw line, you still are going to be stuck in a lot of those games, especially if your offense is struggling. So I don't know if a Tang team is ever going to be a great defensive rebounding team, but if you can win the offensive glass at a high percentage and get to the free throw line at a high rate, you give yourselves a chance. So I think those things come together. I think they find the right fit in the portal with 3 or 4 guys. And I think next year's team is looking a lot more like this year's Texas Tech or BYU than this year's K-State Cincinnati.
All right, I lied. There's one more question, and I'm going to preface this. I didn't put it on the outline because I wanted an initial reaction from you. I'm prefacing this by saying Jerome Tang's not leaving. Everyone calm down. People outside of Manhattan keep trying to connect him to other jobs. I am like 98% confident no one has anything to worry about. This has been going around in my group chat, and I've even made jokes, but I'm not joking about it. If Jerome Tang were to leave, would you take sober Bob Huggins for 3 years or roll the dice and see if Gene is going to make another great hire? What are you choosing?
I'm taking sober Bob. I mean,
yeah,
sober Bob running it back with sober Bob Huggins for 3 years would be fantastic, in my opinion.
I mean, I think he has like a chip on his shoulder, something to prove. Again, Jerome Tang's not going anywhere. If you're having me choose between Jerome Tang and sober Bob Huggins, I'm taking Jerome Tang. So people, and you know, if someone from the basketball staff is listening to this, I know you guys sometimes do. This is not me trying to push. I don't want that. I'm making it very clear. I don't think it's going to happen, and I don't want it to happen. But if it were to happen, I think 3 years with Bob Huggins, with him like, man, these bastards at West Virginia fired me. They shouldn't have fired me. I want to get back into coaching. 3 more years running it back with Bob Huggins. Could you imagine? Could you imagine that introductory press conference? Oh my gosh.
This is a great way to hypothetically end the show. Like, yeah, hypothetical to end the show is perfect, Scott. Like,
well, and again,
this is a great hypothetical. This is a fantastic hypothetical.
I think it's one of my better questions, and I love coming up with fun hypotheticals. I just, you know, him getting another K-State windbreaker, people breaking back out their Huggyville shirts. Like, I think, and again, I don't want Jerome Tang to go anywhere, but if it were to happen, I don't know if Gene Taylor would do it, but I would openly be campaigning for Bob Huggins to come back.
Yeah, I'd be with you.
Not Doug Gottlieb, though.
No, I kind of was on the Doug train the first time. I'm never again. Although he'd be great for Oklahoma State, I think.
I do love that it doesn't matter. You know, I don't think it would happen for K-State, but I do love that every time that the Oklahoma State job does pop up, he's just like, hey, look, I still want this job. And people interview him, and it's amazing. It's great. I think they might end up with Nico, but, you know, we'll see what happens. DeVries at West Virginia, I think it's a good hire. I think the Big 12 is still going to just be a death gauntlet. So.
Yeah, I was just thinking you're losing two basically bubble-ish teams this year, Oklahoma and Texas. You're getting an elite team in Arizona. You're getting two bubble teams in Utah and Colorado and one okay team in Arizona State. So
is Bobby Hurley still at Arizona State?
I don't know. I think so. I don't think they fired him.
Okay. Well, I mean, again, it's just going to get nuttier. So,
yeah, it's going to be crazy. Basketball's going to be tougher. Like, it's –
Oh, 100%. And again, that now we're just rambling, but I even think that this idea that, oh, football's dead. How many years? I mean, again, Oklahoma had an amazing run, but like outside of last year, Texas was not anything. Oklahoma was down. I think the Big 12's in a good spot. All right, timeout. I'm giving you the other hypothetical just because at this point, if people are still listening, then shout out to you. Here's the other hypothetical. With the ACC on life support, if they were to try to rally the troops and survive after some of these big brands leave, and the czar of the college football world came to you and said, Jimmy, would you give up Cincinnati, West Virginia, and Central Florida, and then you get to pick whoever you want west of Kansas, not a Big Ten team, but like, you know, Oregon State, Washington State, UNLV, Nevada, any of these teams, San Diego State, to then truly be a more geographically together conference, and you're getting rid of those three schools on the East. Are you doing it?
Ooh, that's a good question. That is a good question. I would highly consider it because we're losing West Virginia.
So you're UCF. Getting rid of and Cincinnati. So it's basically the Eastern time zone schools are gone. You can, you know, I would do it. And I don't know if I'm adding Oregon State or Washington State, or I don't know who I'd add, but I don't really care for them.
Yeah. No, and then
you're just the west of the Mississippi Conference.
No, I kind of like the idea. I like that. That's a good hypothetical too. Like I wouldn't be opposed to it. And I think there's some pretty good schools out there you could go get. I don't know which, you know, I would lean toward those two Pac-12 leftovers. And then the third one is a little more tricky. It's like,
Just bring Oregon State and you're a 14 team conference.
That would be okay too. That'd be okay too.
All right. Well, that's the hypothetical show. Jimmy, say whatever you want to the Boneheads.
Enjoy your offseason. Hopefully we have some fun Royals over the next at least give us a month, Royals. At least give us into early May of thinking we're maybe a contending team. The Central is terrible. So why not be the worst of all the bad teams in the Central, or the best of all the bad teams in the Central? Who's to say it shouldn't be us? So, Bobby Witt, maybe he can be American League MVP. Who knows?
So Seren Petro's, who I have a rivalry that he doesn't know about, to become Shahan's favorite person in Kansas City. He has his Royals podcast, Kauffman Corner, I think. Mm-hmm. And they were having their big predictions episode. And they were saying that Cole Reagans and Bobby Witt Jr. both were going to finish fourth or better in the AL MVP and the Cy Young. And if that happens and we're not, like,
we better be in the World Series.
I mean, I don't know about World Series, but at least, like, you know, come September, you know, I'm still watching the games on Wednesdays, you know. So. We'll see if that happens.
I will say that I did do a month of Bally Sports Plus.
Well, I hope.
I've got the 7-day.
You're a big enough fan that you need to just go all in, man.
I've got the 7-day window, but I did the monthly. I didn't do the season.
Okay. Well, I think you're a big enough fan. You should go season, but, you know, it's your money. I'll let you do with it what you want. But that's all we have. To anyone who is still listening, if you tweet a gif of a dog of any kind to both Jimmy and myself, or Jimmy and Bosco's voice, just a gif of a dog, I will get one of you guys a gift card to Manhattan Brewing Company. There you go. So there's the secret if anyone is listening this long. So for Jimmy, for Chauncey, the best dog in the world, my name is Scott McFarland. Folks, it was a basketball season, that is for sure. We'll hopefully – so something popped up in my schedule. We may not have the six-year anniversary show this Friday with Grant. It might get moved to next week, but that is going to be coming, and I think we'll have some sort of Q&A show that will drop on Monday. So that's the schedule. We love you guys. Go Cats. Go Royals. Go Bat Cats. Go Sporting. Go all the sports teams. So, yeah, that's it.
Hail to the purple. Hail to the white. Wildcat in spirit. Wildcat in fight. Hail, alma mater, from sea to sea. Onward forever, hail victory.
Buttum, buttum, buttum,
buttum. Fight, UK State Wildcats, form alma mater fight. Glory in the combat for the purple and the white. Faithful to our colors, we will ever be. Fighting, ever fighting for a Wildcat victory.
Fight, 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 fight.
UK State Wildcats for alma mater. Fight, 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 fight. Glory in the combat for the purple and the white. Faithful to our colors, we will ever be. Fight.
Network.